This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on November 15, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next matter on the agenda is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on RightMarch.com PAC A09-25. I don't know if there's any presentation from Auditor OGC. If not, we'll move on to the motion that's on the table.
That's good.
Okay. There's a motion on the table from the last open meeting. It's spelled out in the minutes. Commissioner McGann moved to approve the part of finding 2 that concludes that RightMarch.com PAC Incorporated demonstrated that the terms of the contract are in the normal course of the vendor's business in the appropriate supporting language in the report that supports that conclusion in finding 2. Is there any discussion on the motion? Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the attempt to find more areas that we can agree on. It's always a worthy exercise, but I'm not going to be able to support the motion. For me, it was a very close call as to whether it's a it was not a contribution, and I was willing to find that it is, I think they provided some evidence, but not. Not all of the evidence that we might have wanted to see about the contract and similar contracts. But, you know, what it comes down to is that I was comfortable with the conclusion about the contract when it went along with debt reporting. I find it more difficult to split it because, to me, it's interrelated. The reporting is related to the conclusion. So, regretfully, I'm not going to be able to support the motion.
Commissioner McGann.
The committee, and not only the committee, but others who participate in politics and raise money and do the sorts of things that this audited committee does, are potentially left now twisting in the wind, because there's two unanswered questions here. Well, there's really three. First, there was already a motion to adopt the finding, and you don't get to that part of the, you don't get to that conclusion until you agree the contract is okay. So there's already been a vote where three commissioners have, whether they knew it or not at the time, voted to say the contract was fine. And the purpose of my motion was merely to make clear that there's actually six commissioners that think the contract is fine. Now we learn that there were three, and now there's still three, but it's a different three, only at the FEC. Does that rhyme? Sort of. What other proof would they have to offer to satisfy the concern? The statement was made that more they could have done or whatnot. They hired an outside counsel. They had very thorough treatment. We discussed at length the number of other contracts they provided. What else would they have had to show you to make this contract okay? And two, I don't follow how this is intertwined. Either the contract is okay or it isn't. Contract's okay so long as we get them on the debt, but if we don't get them on the debt, then we have to get them on the contract. I hope that's not what we're saying. But for those who have to do this sort of thing in the future, what they take away from this is really the general question that ties together the two issues that I've heard raised here at the table. If anyone wants to try to answer, that's fine. I guess you don't have to, but not answering sends a message that if you want to try to comply, well, too bad. We'll keep you in the air.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We don't have any examples of agreements with the vendors, other customers. But, I mean, for me, it really is more the second point than the first. And I fully understand that for you these are two separate, segregable issues, and they're just not for me. But, you know, I think we're just going to disagree on that.
Commissioner McGann?
So going forward, if they would, let me get this straight. If they would decide to report it as debt, then the contract is okay? Or is it, but because they don't report debt, then the contract's not okay? Is that what the takeaway is?
I mean, I think under our analysis, we would look at them. It wouldn't be dispositive to one or the other. If they reported the debt, as we took the position that they should have reported the debt, that wouldn't necessarily go to whether or not it was an impermissible, it resulted in an impermissible in-kind contribution or not.
So even the auditor's own report doesn't conflate them. They're not intertwined, right? Could you say that in the mic? I see you're nodding no, but just for fun, for those listening at home.
Yes, we don't believe they're intertwined, other than the fact that they're based on similar, the same set of documentation and facts. We see them as two separate issues.
Madam Vice Chair?
Well, the original report had them both in one finding, and then this was an attempt to segregate out those two issues. So, you know, I found it more persuasive when it was all part of the same finding.
Commissioner McGann?
In that one finding, since we just now, we're finding common ground, I think now we agree it was all in one finding. We had this discussion last time, but just to refresh everyone's memory, part of that finding was that the contract was, and I'm using sort of shorthand, the contract was okay, meaning there was no in-kind. Right? That's part of what the auditors determine, which is part of the finding. You don't get to the debt issue without deciding the predicate contract issue. So to say it's all part of it, it was all in one finding, when you vote for that finding, you've already bought into what I'm saying on the contract and what you're saying on the contract, right?
Let me start off by saying we probably could have made a better presentation of this in the report, and I'll take that as a learning experience for the future. But again, the issues are separate. Based on the documentation and information they provided to us, we determined that the contract appeared to be didn't extend credit in the normal course of business. However, we still feel the debt needs to be reported.
Mr. Calvert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I can just clarify a bit OGC's thinking on this. Our advice to the auditors at the interim stage was there's an issue here as to whether there are two issues here. There's an issue here as to whether this no-risk fundraising contract represented an impermissible corporate contribution and whether it did or didn't. The Commission has always, to our knowledge, always treated no-risk arrangements as extensions of credit, which are subject to the rules on the reporting of debt. The committee came back with information regarding, it came back with an affidavit regarding its own practices. It came back with 32 contracts provided by other vendors that indicated to us that the practice was not unusual in the fundraising industry. We also looked at whether, in fact, the activity paid for itself, because that had come up. That had been one of the particular factors that had been looked at in prior no-risk matters. And the representation of the vendor was that, yes, that the activity paid for itself. So we recommended a conclusion that there was no impermissible contribution here. That does not change our recommendation. That I understand others may not agree with it, but our recommendation separately is these types of arrangements have always been treated as extensions of credit and extensions of credit or debt subject to reporting. Now, we didn't get to this point because we thought there was no contribution here. But if you were, I can see an argument that if you were to say that the basis for there was no need to report because the committee never really owed anything here because it was never going to owe anything and there wasn't a debt, then I can see an argument that that reopens the question as to whether there was an impermissible contribution.
Okay, you see that. I don't. Could you explain that?
Because you're getting awfully close to concluding that the committee is getting something for nothing.
If it pays for itself and there's no debt, how can they still get something for nothing?
If the committee in the previous AOs and MERS on these types of arrangements, one of the things that the Commission has looked at is all of the risk of loss in an arrangement where there is some risk of loss borne by the vendor as opposed to the committee. The committee has, if the committee doesn't give up some sort of consideration equal to the usual and normal charge and the fair market value for this type of transaction, it's getting the services of the fundraising vendor plus, in this particular instance, 5% off the top, arguably without having provided equivalent consideration. Now, I'm not saying that we'd go there. We didn't reach that. We didn't have to reach that because we concluded that this met the standards that had been set forth in the New York advisory opinion from 91 and the CLPAC MER. But it does, if you conclude that the reason they didn't have to pay to report a debt was they never owed anything in the first place because they were never obligated to provide anything in the first place, then you at least get close to raising that issue. we said no, that this turned out to meet all, to check all the boxes, and it wasn't an in-kind contribution. But we've always treated these as extensions of credit, so you still got to report them as extensions of credit.
My question, though, was that was a nice explanation. It wasn't responsive to what the question was, though, because my question had the predicate assumption that if it's not an in-kind, and if there's, or if it pays for itself, and if there's not debt, how does an in-kind result? And you sort of stripped away those predicate assumptions and then answered a different question, I think. Let me try to rephrase the question this way. If this contract resulted in an in-kind contribution, that cannot also result in reportable debt. I mean, if a prohibited in-kind just doesn't trigger debt reporting, it's a prohibited in-kind.
A prohibited in-kind can trigger debt reporting if the way it becomes a prohibited in-kind is that if an extension of credit that is permissible ab initio ripens into to a contribution over time through a failure to collect.
Sure, but we're not talking about that. I'm not talking hypotheticals. I'm talking about this case, and you understand what – I think you understand what I'm asking, and now we're tapping around a little bit here. Situation where this contract, these facts, results in a prohibited in-kind, which is different than what I think your conclusion is legally and what the auditors agreed with and what they think, right? But let's assume that predicate is different. So you have a prohibited in-kind. That prohibited in-kind, is that also reportable as debt? No. It's prohibited in-kind. It's not a reportable debt. The Commission's never taken that position before.
I think that's right if it was void ab initio. In these types of arrangements, where some of them we've seen before that that have worked or that we didn't reach a final conclusion on. What we've seen is that the committee reports the money that comes in as part of the fundraising scheme. It reports those as contributions in, even if it doesn't actually touch it, and the vendor keeps it. But then it reports, we said that an important part of the of whether it's a contribution or not really doesn't get found out at the beginning. It gets found out whether if it pays for itself over time. A lot of prospecting schemes don't. What committees have done is reported the debt.
Can I ask you something? What's your basis for that statement you just made, that a lot of prospecting schemes don't pay for themselves?
In the previous matter, in some of the previous matters we've seen. I mean, that's the reason for the no risk aspect to the contract.
It's a broad statement. I mean, a couple of MERS or a couple of previous matters, that's a broad statement that regarding prospecting, right? I mean, I want to get a sense of how broad was that assertion.
In the ones that we have seen, there has been some risk that the prospecting did not pay for itself, a considerable risk, and as described in AO 1991-18, a prospecting scheme is considerably more speculative than a solicitation of proven donors.
Does the AO use the word scheme?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be pejorative by using the word scheme.
But that's my point. You are. You're starting with a presumption that there's something suspect about these. When you say a broad statement that a lot of these have, and I don't, the statement I just questioned you on, and scheme and that sort of thing. And my point is, you have a committee here that probably looked at what happened before. I assume they did. They have a little bit of a new wrinkle as to the debt issue. And I'm buying it. We've already established that, right? I'm still hung up on the interrelation between the two issues, and I haven't heard anything that makes any sense that to get to that somehow if there was a prohibited in-kind, meaning the first issue, the contract issue, goes the other way, that we need to worry about the debt reporting.
I think it goes back, actually, it does go back to my earlier answer about whether the contribution is because the extension is void ab initio or whether it ripens over time. One of the important factors that the Commission has looked at in these, and actually the one that pushed us over the edge in this one to no, there's no contribution here, is that the activity paid for itself. It didn't initially pay for itself. It raised enough money to pay for itself over time. That difference between paying for itself and not yet paying for itself is what the Commission has traditionally viewed as an extension of credit, and if it's an extension of credit, in our view, it was reportable.
Let me ask this final question. Let's assume this committee or a similarly situated committee enters into the same deal or a materially indistinguishable deal, meaning they use the same contract. Difference is that committee reports some debt. What's the legal answer to that? Is that a clean bill of health, or are there still loose ends?
Materially indistinguishable, except that the debt is, assuming the debt's fully reported.
Right.
I think that's a clean bill of health.
Okay. Commissioner Walther, did you still have a comment? Sorry to.
No, I was just wondering if, you know, I don't think votes are going to change based on that conversation. You had a question. Last time you said there should be a memo entry at some point. This is contingent liability. Am I missing that? If there was a memo entry that could be made when you do file it? Sorry about that. I'm ready to vote.
Mr. Hittermister, do you have a response to that?
I think there was discussion about the reporting of estimated debts. Right. Related to this, but I don't think that it was a memo entry involved, or maybe a memo notation.
Okay. Right. I don't want to steal it. Some debt was reported, Commissioner Peterson. We were talking, sorry.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify with the auditors and counsel is that this isn't a circumstance where the audited committee claims that it had no debt to report. They did report some debt.
That's correct.
Footnote 3 talks about that the RMC reported debt of a little over $279,000.
That's correct.
This was a question not of whether or not they reported debt or didn't report debt. It was what was the amount of that debt. As I understand it, the audited committee, their concern was that there were statements that were being given to them that they claim were missing, that the auditors categorize as invoices, and they dispute that they really were invoices. They, as they put it, they said, according to the RMC, the amounts listed on financial statements totaling over $1.6 million represented the maximum possible amounts that PA could earn if the telemarketing campaign were exceptionally successful. To me, that seemed like that was where the core of the dispute was, is they were saying those statements really aren't invoices in that these were as I said, there were statements about what might come in if we were doing very well, but it's not necessarily the amount. And they claimed that really what the actual amount was that they owed was and ended up paying was about $568,000, right?
That's correct.
And this wasn't the case where they said we were getting an extension of credit that we never had to pay, that we never had to report, because they actually did report nearly $280,000 in debt.
Correct.
Okay.
Madam Chair. If I could clarify perhaps with our colleagues from the audit division, our understanding was that they had represented that these weren't really invoices, nothing had to be reported, period, and we weren't entirely sure why they had reported, given that argument, why they had reported the $279,000 or what that represented.
We never got a clear answer on why they were reporting some of the debt and not all of it.
Okay.
The closest we got is that represented some basic costs that the committee was required to pay for. and paper printing, that kind of thing.
Okay, and I guess another explanation could be of that 568 that there could have been some of that could have been paid within the. I don't know. Oh, no problem. Was there a further clarification?
I've just been reminded that they eventually dropped reporting that debt. I forget which year it was.
They dropped reporting it?
The debt that they had been reporting.
Okay. Do we know for what reason?
No.
Is it because it was no longer on their books, or was it that they determined that they should have never reported it in the first place? Or is it that's just not?
I would be speculating if I answered. Okay. I don't know why they dropped it. They just dropped from subsequent reports to the audited period.
Okay. But in terms of any discrepancy between the 279 and 568, we don't really. I mean, it could be that they actually paid those amounts off before they went on to another report, so they wouldn't they could have been paid off in a timely manner, so that no debt was ever incurred. But we just don't know the actual facts as to why there's a discrepancy between those numbers.
The 568 would have included some invoices they paid that did not represent debt.
Okay. Thanks.
Commissioner McGann.
Just one point on that. It's not that we don't know. If there's a debt on the report and the debt disappears, I think it's safe to say that means it's paid off. It's not nearly the mystery. I mean, I don't want to suggest or leave the auditors thinking that they somehow didn't ask questions they were supposed to ask. When a report's filed under oath, I think we take it at face value, right? And it just because they don't know sitting here today doesn't mean the report doesn't speak for itself. And if you want to say, well, they were hiding the ball and it was a wrong report, that's an entirely different issue. But that's not – it's not an open vacuum, and I don't think you're suggesting that.
Yeah, and to the extent I was – that – came across, that's not at all what I was suggesting. I was suggesting that there could be a perfectly straightforward and innocent way to explain why their reports said what they said and that the representations they made are consistent with their overall argument.
Commissioner Bowerly?
I just want to back up to the debt reporting issue because this is the question for Ms. Ciccone. I mean, if a debt is no longer showing up, we would expect to see that it has been on another part of the report paid off. It would never just drop off. I have no idea why it changed or what they did, but I assume the auditors would have been able to tell whether it had been paid off by the same report that did not show the debt would have showed a payment if that's what they had done.
That's right. They're required to disclose the debt until fully extinguished, so we would expect to see payments on disbursement schedules and then to show that the debt was paid off on the Schedule D as well. And if it was just dropped, it would be something that in the course of a review we would question.
As well in the context of an audit, if we saw something drop off, we would ask questions as well.
Commissioner McGann?
In this case, there's no question that the committee was paying in some form to the fundraising consultant, whether it was via a prospecting deal, so that was a take the money that comes in and pay the bill, or a direct payment. I mean, it's not as if there was no money. It's not like the committee just didn't pay for anything, right? So you can't necessarily connect the debt falling off with what money was moving that may have extinguished the debt. But again, it's not that they've done anything wrong. It just maybe not be as clear as some would like, or we really haven't focused on that issue, so we're at this point completely making it up on why the debt fell off the books.
If we saw the debt drop off the report, and if we saw a payment on Schedule B and we couldn't associate it, the committee did not report it on a Schedule D as a payment extinguishing the debt, especially if the amounts differ or don't add up exactly, I don't know that we could initially presume that payment was for the debt, since they were paying the vendor for other services simultaneously.
Okay. There's no other comment. There's a motion on the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion fails 3-3. I believe that's all we have for this audit for today. Mr. Hintermister, do you have everything you need for now? You'll go back and...
Yeah, we're fine. We're good.
Okay. Mr. Bonovitz?
Are we okay on finding three? The last, going through the last votes, we voted to approve all three findings, and that didn't go. And then you did finding one and two. Do we need to do three?
Madam Vice Chair,
I think it could be a little confusing. There was a motion to approve one and three that failed,
right.
And then there was a motion to approve one, and that actually passed.
Right.
So I suppose one could infer from that that three failed. But if you if people think it would add clarity, I suppose we could move three separately.
Well, that's what I meant. I wanted to get clarification so I understood and was certain.
Communications again.
Failed 3-3.
But then there was a motion to approve 1, 2, and
I think everybody agrees that 3 failed.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. Sorry.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to take a recess at this time and reconvene at noon in order to discuss the AFF matter and the Maine Republican Party audit. Thank you.